My name is Kathleen Hurdy, and my husband and I are here as part of the teaching staff this week. We're doing some teaching, but we have learned enough about each other in our, 39 years of marriage, it's gone so fast, that we know what each of us likes best to do. We sometimes finish each other's sentences, but we also know that we have a lot of distinctions, that are there are a lot of differences between and among between us. And so I'm doing the sessions yesterday and today, and we'll share the one tomorrow a little bit more, and then Dave will be leading the seminar on Friday, the one on shared hospitality, which fits in with the ministries that he particularly has been working on. Just a word of background. I am, for those of you who weren't here on Monday, my experience in struggling with issues of leadership and power has been a long, long struggle. And I began my work life in what I called later 10 years of full-time home administration, preceded by 1 year of teaching before we were married. And then I became a classroom, full-time classroom teacher, and later a staff developer and a principal. So 20 years in public education in 4 different school districts in California have shaped my thinking about leadership and power issues. And as most of you know who have anything to do with elementary schools, that's predominantly a world of women. 85% of the women, of the elementary school teachers, are women. In 1939, about 55% of the principals were women. That's when women were paid less. As the school systems became more bureaucratized and more established as institutions of hierarchy, the people who were seen to have expertise at the top of a hierarchical way of arranging organizations were men. And so during those years, in the mid-years of this century, the numbers of women principals declined radically, so that when I began my research in the 80s, the total number of women principals at the elementary school level was 11%. That's beginning to grow a little bit more. But what we're talking about is how do we as individuals gifted by God with particular gifts and strengths and weaknesses, how do we use our leadership skills in ways that are contributive to a nourished community? How do we bring those skills together? So our focus today is going to be on how all of us, women and men together, provide leadership in concert with others for a nourishing environment for growth, for action, and for community. We believe that leadership can indeed be shared, that leadership is really a shareable process. But often our understanding of leadership is focused in a more, because we've become socially acculturized to bureaucratic structures, in a more hierarchical way of thinking. So that most of the time we think of leadership in terms of a singular leader at the top of a pyramid. In congregations, that would be probably the pastor or pastors. In organizations, it would be the CEO. We'll use the term CEO, where this is used in a way that means chief operating officer, chief executive officer. But if we can think of that in terms of whether it's in the household, whether you have a CEO model in your household where the husband becomes the CEO and the wife becomes the COO, the chief operating officer, or something else like that. The CEO model is primarily a pyramidical model. What you've all had some experience with leadership in this kind of a model? How would you describe, whether it's in a school district, a business, a corporation, a small nonprofit, a household, wherever it is, a congregation, how would you describe the pyramidal chief executive officer style?
The ideal or the...
Well, just what's your first impression of thinking, when you think CEO, and you don't reflect on it, the ideal, you don't reflect on the ideal necessarily, what are the characteristics of a CEO style leadership?
No options.
No options? Okay. What else?
Cramps.
Authoritative.
Hot, authoritative.
Director.
White male.
Well,
I mean, if we look, for example, at those of you who are ELCA, if we look at the ELCA church colleges, every one of our church colleges has a white male president. Not that there aren't women qualified, that's just the way it is at this point in our history. And that's true for many corporations and organizations and elsewhere. What other?
A delegator.
Yes. Delegates tasks. To whom?
To people.
What'd you say?
Unable to do it itself.
Delegation is in a downward mode.
In a demanding kind of way, doesn't it?
It usually delegates and demands right. Sometimes. That's
you know, strong expectations.
Right, strong right. Expectations.
Well, absolute power.
Absolute power.
Right.
Okay.
Even if he can't delegate properly, he still has the power.
Right.
That's why I was asking whether you wanted a real or an ideal or whatever, because I would argue that the most effective CEO, in fact, doesn't do any of those things.
Right, right.
Facilitates the, or empowers the individuals below him or her to, so that all of those people, in one way, make the CEO look good.
Yeah, all right, so there is always the element, and I think this is a very important note, that the CEO does not always have to delegate in a demanding way. It often happens that way. We've all experienced that. But it can be a facilitative, empowering kind of process. Likely, it's still downward. In your ideal, do the people at the bottom of the pyramid facilitate the CEO?
Oh, absolutely.
So in an ideal view, then, it can go both ways.
The successful CEO maximizes the contributions of everybody.
Right. Okay, so, and I think here we're getting to the nubbins of Maxim.
We know.
Well, anyway, the idea of maximizing the benefits and the adeptness of the whole. What people are saying now, and I think you're pointing us in the direction of the new and more exciting ways of thinking about leadership, which is, and Tom Peters certainly, and In Search of Excellence, Peter Drucker in much of his work, particular people who are, in a sense, the gurus in the field, are stressing this idea of maximization of talent throughout the organization. What's happened in so much of our pyramidal structure and bureaucracies are often, that's not spelled right either, bureaucracies are often pyramidal in shape and are intended to be very rational organizations. Rationality being a prize. Those of you who were in the Bible study this morning and heard Steinke speak about the part of our brain that is rational or thinking part of our brain, that's often a prized piece. What's often less prized is the emotional aspect, the feeling aspect in an organizational structure. There's not much room for feeling in the bureaucratic structure as we have shaped them in this country institutionally. If there are exceptions, and I do believe the movement is in the direction of impressive, actually acknowledging the fact that emotional energy is also a part of it. There are two other models, and this is the direction you're pointing us. There are two other models for organization. It's not that this will be eliminated in organization. There will still be some pyramidical aspects to our life. But there's been a lot of experimentation and liveliness around two new images of organization. And this particular kind of organizational structure represented by these images, the discussion on that is often being led by women. Frances Hesselbein, who was the manager of the Girl Scouts, the CEO of the Girl Scouts for a number of years, did some extraordinarily good work in developing the kind of leadership that is represented in the web. My poor illustration of a web there. It's often the case, and her work, by the way, a wonderful resource to read about Frances Hesselbein's work, is to take a look at Sally Helgeson's book called The Female Advantage, Women's Ways of Leadership. It's a popular book. I'm sorry that I did not put it on the bookstore list, so they don't have it here, but you can pick it up at most bookstores. It's by Sally Helgeson, called Women's Ways of The Female Advantage, Women's Ways of Leadership. Sally Helgeson tells the story of Frances Hesselbein and her work with the Girl Scouts and her modeling of this work. Peter Drucker, who has been kind of the head honcho in administrative and leadership studies, observed Hesselbein's work and got acquainted with her and found there some of the most exciting, for him, exciting new directions in understanding organizations that work in a more collaborative way. I call these, and oh, by the way, this is the double helix. The idea here has been developed by Helen Reagan, a woman at Connecticut College in New London, Connecticut, who has developed a kind of a model of leadership following on the idea of the DNA. I'm not skilled to speak of it as well as I should be, but the DNA is a kind of a spiral model. Spiral. You sound like you really can.
<You're doing okay.
laughs> Anyway, it's a spiral model that is more parallel and collaborative than is the old pyramidal model. And she talks about people in pyramids, most of whom are below the fault line, as she says, are often ignored, not empowered in the main, and whose gifts and graces in an organization are lost if there isn't this facilitative movement. What happens to communications here?
It's one way.
It's basically one way in this kind of a structure.
Not when it works well.
Well, yeah. Right. But, part of what I was struggling with when I started work on this is that administrative textbooks that I was given to read as I studied administration when I went to Berkeley were that information was precious, information should not be shared too broadly or too carelessly, rather than the communication of interaction. Now, again, there's more and more thinking on the idea, and I think you're right, that much of the new knowledge around administrative life is recognizing that communication has to go all directions. So when you talk about communication, a web suggests that communication can move everywhere. Let's talk a little bit more. Let's start with the ideal here. If we were going to call this CEO squared, I just give it that name to call it the collaboratively empowered organization rather than the CEO. So what I've called CEO squared is a collaboratively empowered organization built on some other model than pyramidal. with a conscious attention to the fact that instead of change being commanded, as it often is, demanded, it can be a process of turning around together. What Drucker said, and what some of the findings in my own research about, my research was done with women in the principalship, was the constant use of the term, I want to turn things around. I want to be in the center of things, not at the top, but at the center of things. So the web allows a person to be at the center where there's communication going all directions, and hopefully it's two-way, as the ideal in the bureaucratic structure or hierarchical structure would be. There's also permeable boundaries where interaction with the community is also sought. Any questions at this point? Yeah.
Yeah, I just to be a little bit of a devil's advocate.
You are, and that's fine.
Because I think if you were put into place in the CEO model, as you've got the hierarchical thing, a feedback mechanism. And
right.
By the way, any CEO worth his or herself better know what the folks on the bottom have to tell them or tell them, so that they aren't isolated from the operation. And I think it's not automatic when you have the web that the communication is going to be two ways.
Right, and I do think that what you're pointing up is an important caveat or an important reminder that no one picture, no one image is going to be perfect. It's going to not fit everywhere. But if you were to ideally picture an organization built on the web or the double helix model, where their communication flows, the authority flows, the idea flows are more fluid, more out from the center. And we'll talk some more, a little bit about some specific ideas of how that works. What would it look like? Yeah.
Well, I'm just wondering if, in a sense, what has to happen in any model is attitude.
Right.
I mean, that's really what has to be a fundamental part of any system, whether it be pyramid, web, or otherwise.
A bad attitude can mess up.
Yeah,
mess up.
Right, you're right, right.
If a CEO, I mean the chief officer, comes in with an attitude that is going to be hierarchical, patriarchal, in charge, mm-hmm. and not be anything other than that, it doesn't make any difference what model you use.
Yes.
You're going to have that spirit.
Right, and I think attitudes clearly do determine a great deal of it. And I, you know, keep pushing us on it, that's fine. What I'd like to do, though, is to explore if you used a web model or a double helix model or some combination thereof, what would you expect to happen? What would you think might happen in these kinds of collaborative structures?
Somebody would have to have a view of the whole.
Okay.
And that would be ideal in the other.
Right.
Too.
Okay, so there has to be a view of the whole, held by someone or many.
Well, ideally by many, but at least the person that's the CEO must have the view of the whole.
Right, okay, to give a whole holistic picture. Other ideas.
It has to be more than one. Because otherwise you're back basically to the
other model, yeah, right,
right,
right.
Well, it has to be a common vision then.
Right, and so common vision is made how?
By sharing ideas.
By sharing a dream, okay. So this would be
consensus.
Shared dream. There's a lot of work being done now in terms of organizational visioning. Some work on what's called strategic planning, which lays things out in the future, say a five-year timeline or so, and you plan ahead as to what the constraints and the possibilities for the organization are. Another form, perhaps it's a form of strategic planning, but read an article not long ago that said strategic planning is dead, and what's in is now, and again, I think these are far more related than the otherwise, is strategic positioning. And strategic positioning is another way, frankly, of doing strategic planning. But it's strategic positioning is getting a vision together throughout the whole organization of what you want your position as an organization to be in the future. A congregation. What do you want to happen? What is the position of this congregation in the year 2000? What could it be? How shall we dream that out together? Engaging the whole congregation in different ways about what that could be. What is this business going to look like? What is the particular vision that or gifts that we have to give? By the year 2000, we're going to be at that point. And what'll it take? It's a lot of work in terms of what'll it take to get there. But the dream has to be there. So sharing a common vision. It is true that the leader has to keep this view of the whole together, but the leadership is shared in the development of that vision, and ownership is then bought in that process. What other things would you expect to happen in this kind of an organizational structure?
You have more interest in those at the bottom of the pyramid,
okay,
who generally have their gifts lost.
I've been particularly interested in the way the Swedish model of study circles has contributed to getting people all through the organization engaged. They have problem-solving study circles at all levels of the Swedish corporations, in the church, in the schools, and so forth. In fact, the study circle idea has really taken a hold there. And what that is bringing the best wisdom from throughout the organization into the problem solving and the creative visioning for the future. So that if something isn't working at Volvo, they go to the people who are voluntarily interested in helping solve that problem. Find out what's causing it not to work, what could make it work better. And the teams that develop to solve those particular problems at Volvo are voluntary, and they are open to everybody in the organization. And they have found that tremendous, we drive a Volvo out of principle, you see. They have found that the tremendous gifts of wisdom that are garnered in that kind of collaborative leadership are really very, very valuable. What other things could happen?
The public image of the CEO is very much submerged to the one on the left.
Public image.
The public persona.
Right.
You mean it's not narcissistic?
Yeah.
No, just that the organization is not known by a single individual.
Right, right. And part of this, what's happening is that some organizations are moving this way, and there is a fear that we're losing leadership. You read the leadership literature, you get a lot of crying about, well, we're the leaders today. Particularly, we hear this in government. But the leaders today may be just what you've said. They may be more submerged. They may be engaging more people. Don't know yet. Well, I mean, it's, the agenda's out on that one.
We're in our parish, which is extremely large, with about four or five separate music entities. They all agreed to come together and form a committee, such like the web.
Uh-huh.
Now, one of the problems is that they are still dealing with this paid and unpaid. If you're paid, you're in a different status. And the people who are paid have a trouble grappling with this thought, too, that this is no longer paid, unpaid, I'm paid more than you, I'm the leader, and that kind of thing. So we're grappling with that, and then the ones that aren't paid are saying, hey, I don't know if I want to give up my paid job to be here to deal with this, you know. And there is that little, mm-hmm. And that is definitely going on, and the paid person, the highest paid person, is having trouble backing down because he's still assuming, and he keeps on saying, well, you volunteers versus me. Because
right.
So that is a real problem. And what has happened is the representatives of the other music teams have just said, well, hey, I'm not going to deal with this, and I'm unpaid, therefore I don't have to show up and participate in this. So how do you...
Yeah, and what you're bringing up is one of the major warts in collaboration. It takes a common commitment that isn't always there to develop that kind of perspective. And it makes it very, very difficult, if particularly when these tensions are hierarchicalized. I'm paid, therefore I know more. I'm paid, therefore I'm better. I'm paid, therefore listen to me. That's where the problems come. The Wilder Foundation in Minneapolis has done a very interesting piece describing the distinctions between cooperation, coordination, and collaboration. And what has been helpful to me about this, they're talking about organizations, so maybe it would be the five choir programs in your church. In this case, they're talking about civic organizations and church groups and et cetera, collaborating in the community to accomplish a common purpose. But you could use the kind of model they suggest here, where they suggest that, and they don't say that you have to begin at one point and then get to, or you don't have to start with cooperation and move to coordination and then collaboration. They say that it may not be possible for you to achieve collaboration. It may be that cooperation is all you can ever get. When cooperation is interaction on just as an as-needed basis. Cooperation is just as needed. Whereas collaboration, the real shared leadership, the real commitment to a common vision, it would be that the common new mission and goals are created together. And in the creation of those goals, the tensions would have to be on the table. How are we going to deal with this together? Laying that tension on the table. Then you have another wart. What does that lead to then? An inordinate amount of time it takes to work that out. Somebody in our session the other day said we were talking about shared power and the assumptions about power that one has. If in a hierarchical model like this, power is perceived as a finite resource, where if the CEO has more, the people at the bottom have less. Whereas in these models, the presumption is, now again, these are presumptions. This is a presumption that power is something you hold on to. That if you have more, I have less. at whatever level of the organization, finite resource. Here the idea is that power grows, that power is a shareable resource. For me, this is a much more theologically sound model, because God's power, the power of the Holy Spirit at work in building community, is endless. It's shareable. It grows. It is ours for the gift. It is a gift for the receiving. So for me, where power can grow, so that sitting down at a table with five warring music groups, or maybe they're not warring, but let's say they are.
Well, that's the problem, is that they are warring because they have been put into a feeling of subservience.
Right, and so here you get the subservient feeling, the what Rain Eisler calls the dominator model, as distinct from the partnership model, and all of the behaviors of the dominant model lead one to feeling that I don't, lead often many people then to come in feeling I don't have any power, I'm underneath, I'm being dominated. Whereas the partnership model is a way of putting on the table the fears, naming the exist, and then deciding as a group how to deal with those.
Yeah, it seems to me that the growing power thing really has to do with the fact that in cooperation or in collaboration, or whichever one of those you want to use, the sum of the whole there is greater than the sum of the parts,
right,
when they operate independently. And it seems to me odd, actually they should have put fourth C word on there, way off on the left to start things out with. That'd be competition.
Right. Right, you're right.
And the ottoman thing really has to do with the ego of an individual. There's a little story about being out in the rural area, driving along a fence with some wooden fence posts, and there's a turtle that sits on top of this one wooden fence post. And so then
A turtle that sits on the fence post.
So the question is, well, what does that have to do with anything? Well, the answer is that turtle needed help getting up there. Unless the turtle does a crash landing, you'll need help getting back down. And the problem is that too many people don't recognize that with some help, they can be a lot more effective and make more contributions than by themselves.
Exactly, exactly. That's a wonderful story, by the way. That'll stick in our heads for a long time. Because certainly giving and taking help, whether we're paid or unpaid, is going to be the essence of good leadership.
Yeah, ego works both ways. I mean, in the sense that there's ego not to want to be helped because you're too proud.
Right.
Or you don't want to give up any of your control of something you want to be in charge.
Uh-huh. Both of them get in the way.
Yeah, right.
Right. I'm going to ask us to take a few minutes to think to yourself, of a leadership experience in which you personally have participated. Now, we have a glimpse of one already. A leadership experience in which you have participated, whether it's at church, it's with the PTA, in the business community, in the civic community, volunteers, League of Women Voters, wherever. Think of a leadership experience in which you have participated. Or think of a person or group of persons who model for you good leadership. We're thinking now, here we're thinking in ideal terms. What's the best leadership experience you've had? And why do you think it worked? What made it work? And what were the drawbacks? Okay, and so let's take a little bit of time in groups of three or four. Arrange yourselves, think about leadership experiences you've had. You may not have even called it leadership, but leadership in terms of creating a nourishing community or a nourishing environment for growth, whether it's in your family, church, whatever. How have you experienced leadership, and what made it work well for you, and what were the drawbacks? The music group story is a starter. That's one idea, one way. But each of you have had some experience of things happening well because of some leadership taken within the group. So let's share some of the stories that you have of experiences with leadership that is collaborative, that works. Tell us what you came up with. You want to start over here?
I was sharing experience that the business that I work in is a partnership structure that is more akin to the web than to the pyramid, although not exactly.
Sure. Sure.
But all decisions are reached by consensus in this group.
Uh-huh.
There's never a we voted up, we voted down situation. So a lot of input comes in from a lot of different points. But as the organization has grown, it becomes harder and slower to reach a consensus.
Right.
And to have a common vision, because more individuals give you a more diverse outlook. So
the wonders of this model are that it's a consensus building model, and there's lots of input. And the problem is that it's getting harder. Or it takes time.
It takes a lot of time to reach a common vision.
Yeah, it takes time to reach the consensus. The time seems to be a major, major factor in collaborative decision making. Peter Drucker tells a story about the distinction, and again, this is maybe an overgeneralization, a distinction between Japanese style management and American style management, and that's a whole conversation in itself. But for simplicity, the American managers tend to make a decision within a week and take 3 years trying to get the decision implemented throughout the organization. Overstatement granted, but nonetheless. Japanese style was to send teams of people out to ask questions. Takes 3 years to do it, to build the consensus that you're talking about. And then a week to implement it because everybody's been involved in building the consensus. So the question is, you know, ultimately, is time, we look at time in different ways. But to get the blessing takes the time. It takes a lot of wrestling, as Jacob said with the angel. You have to wrestle a lot before the blessing comes. So the time itself, though it's a wart, it's a problem, it's a challenge, nonetheless it is important.
So if you, but if you have a reasonable plan and sort of a long-term kind of process in place, so everything doesn't have its own sense of urgency, because ultimately the time you're talking about is the same.
Right, uh-huh. Right.
And so the idea that it takes more time is not necessarily true.
Right, and time itself may be a wondrous gift, to take time to let things kind of mellow and shape themselves through constant interaction. Other stories. Where else has leadership work? Why don't you tell us about your business?
Well, we have a business with about 15 employees, approximately, and we feel that we've just been at it 6.5 years, so we've had an opportunity to develop this thing, and this is good reinforcement for the way we are trying to run our business.
Uh-huh.
This is great. One of the things that we talked about was, as much as we'd like to collaborate and get everybody's consensus and opinions and feedback, it seems that it's still essential or important to have a leader.
Uh-huh.
And when we talk about a partnership where we have opinions and consensus, I was curious, do you have a leader that are one of the partners that is seen as the higher point?
What's the whole picture?
We have one person who attends to Robert's Rules of Order, but no, everybody's a co-equal.
Okay.
And that's what slows it
down. The chair, do you rotate?
It's chairs? A rotating chair, rotates every year.
But they were talking about leadership in terms of somebody has to sort of keep people on target so that they don't wander away from their primary purpose or mission.
Right. When I was in a principal of a school, one of the ways in which we did, though the school district didn't make us all co-equals, I mean, principals were principals, but one way we tried to at least encourage more collaboration was that a blank agenda was posted all the time for faculty meeting. And then people, teachers, secretaries, janitors, anybody could put items on the agenda that we needed to talk about in a common way. And so that, and there were times when I had to say to the faculty and the staff, what do you want me to know before I make a decision? There were times when I had to make that decision. And what do you want me to know when I speak to the administrative team of the district about this? But it was an open option. The other piece that can be an open agenda is, you know, people, it doesn't have to be that everybody takes responsibility to be managers, but the key is feeling that they have an avenue of communication in to the problem solving. Yes?
It seems to me that there's one thing that's really necessary in order for somebody to feel comfortable operating in that style, and that is that you have to respect and you have to have confidence that other people have something to offer.
Right, and here we get into the idea of respect, and for respect for the ability of everybody in some way. They bring gifts that need to be named and honored. And a certain amount of trust, or a lot of trust, in fact, is an element that is very important here. A number of organizations are using a format called open space technology, which is a style of agenda-less meetings. And they you bring people from the organization together. It can be invitational, or as in the case of Chicago, at the University of Chicago, they did a very interesting piece. Jeffrey Bluestone, the acting associate dean of the basic science department of the University of Chicago, said that the basic science faculty retreat this year is going to use open space technology, which is a self-organizing meeting. And what we do when we get there is that each, the focus for the, it will be a question: how can our basic research and teaching enterprise maximize our scientific stature, student recruitment, education, and our collaboration with each other, as well as the rest of the biomedical enterprise and the university? Wow, it was simply a question. When they got to the meeting, they shaped an agenda together. They listed, what are the things that you want to work on in response to this question? And they formed themselves into five or six groups, working on, some of them worked on student retention, some of them worked on interconnection with other people, whatever it is. But those people who then came into those small work groups came in with an idea or a passion about something or a problem that they knew had to be dealt with in some way. And that particular kind of retreat can be a very effective thing for small businesses, university departments, or whatever.
But they still have an agenda.
But it was a mutually developed agenda.
Well, but there was at least some
context. Question, the framing questions, and perhaps here's where the leader can do the best job, is frame the questions.
Yes, I think that this, like back to our situation, I think the idea of a retreat and coming up with having people come up and write down what they feel is a problem to be dealt with, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. take it completely out of the quote-unquote church environment, mm-hmm. and get them to a place where these things can be talked out and laid on the table. I think that's a wonderful
really
idea
and crucial. Other stories.
Well, another thing that we talked about is the ability to create, let's say, in a business or whatever it is you're trying to do, is a sense of teamwork.
Uh-huh.
And that can be a real positive. And much like this community, we all need each other in our different skills and talents to make this place work.
Mm-hmm. And teamwork, it just is an exciting possibility. How do you make it work, and when doesn't it work?
Yeah.
What fosters teamwork? Because, I mean, look at the Hilden Village itself. It has a combination of directors, a three-person, a triune directorship, or troika. How, I'm going to hopefully spend some time and learn from them how that works, how they, what their problems are, what works well with it.
The respect and the trust.
Mm-hmm. Begins right here, doesn't it? Attitude, respect, and trust. Other, how have you developed the teamwork? What strategies do you use?
Well, we're processing mined material, much like the Holden mine, where we quarry this rock and we process it. And we have these various stages of processing from the mining to the crushing and screening and sorting and to the loadout and marketing of the material. So we have all these different processes that have to go on, and one process can't go on without the prior one being completed. And so we're interdependent.
Yeah, so interdependence and interaction are just crucial to the
Yeah, if you're
crucial.
Dependent upon one another and you bring that into focus, I think a lot of times you need to point that out to people. But that, the fact that we're all interdependent, can and if you focus on it and discuss it, you can create a sense of teamwork,
right? And this is both communicative interaction and problem solving interaction and other kinds of interaction, respectful, trustful interaction between people, human interaction that makes that work. What you've said reminds me of what Judy Rosner has said. She is a professor in the Graduate School of Management at University of California in Irvine. And she has written a lot about this interactive leadership style that that allows for this development of teamwork. And she says that it is the interactive leaders constantly encourage participation. That participation in the all of the work that the organization does, and in the interlinkages between them. They share power and information. They enhance other people's self-worth, and they get others excited about their work. So those are some of the keys that help in the development then of teamwork.
Others. The technological things, though, that you ought to mention, that you have here, all your staff have telephones.
Well, we have a company radio that everybody wears on their belt, and it's a great opportunity. We mainly got it for safety reasons and whatnot, but it's created a real sense of efficiency, and the radios cost, you know, a little bit or a significant amount, but I think they pay for themselves in efficiency. But at the same time, what's happened is you can express your thoughts to people and informally or ask them opinions, and it's an open line of communication that has been developed, and it's become a very positive thing. I don't even know if people realize it, that what's going on, but you're able to ask questions or communicate, and then everybody has the ability to listen in on your conversation.
When they tell the jokes, everybody hears
But what does that do to develop a sense of community, though, too?
Oh, sure.
It's just what a wonderful idea, and technology has allowed that to happen, but commitment on your parts as leaders within the organization also has made that possible. And some people would get all in a fret about having that open communication going on.
If you grew to 75.
I hope not.
We got a nice size group right now.
Keep it there.
That's a good question.
Okay, don't you think, I'm just trying to wrestle with the idea of, I think in my particular situation, of the organizational structure of a church as large, this is like going out, outreach of 7,000 families, and that is really part of the problem, and getting the web and containing the web. And not letting it get out too far. I mean, there is a point where it just becomes, what was it like the ideal number? What would the ideal number be like to participate
in a congregation?
A web.
I would be a little hesitant to put a number on, because a lot depends on the context in which you work. I think that, like for example, in your company, what do you have, 15 employees? That's for that kind of work in that kind of context, you probably wouldn't want to grow much beyond 25, maybe. I don't know. You know, maybe it would work. But whereas a congregation of 350 people can establish an interactive web with maybe some other little webs going on around that are, spiders
satellite web.
But they're still in communication.
That's right. They're still in communication. They're still part of a central vision, central mission, but a lot of interaction between the groups.
That gets harder to do when you got 7,000.
Right, of course it does.
Now, another problem that I've seen come up with this in the last year is the decision of, like you say, phones, which is verbal communication, and so many people are into verbal communication.
Right.
Which is really better in a way, but I know in Bellevue we've become such a network of answering machines.